Welcome to PPM Simplifies. This is a weekly podcast that will help you have a better understanding on environmental regulations and how they relate to your industry. In each episode, we'll talk with experts across various industries who will share their insights with you. This is PPM Simplifies. Hello, and welcome to PPM Simplifies. This is Todd Perry. We have a great topic today to discuss. We've got a resident PPM expert in to visit with us. We're going to talk about national ambient air quality standards with one of our most fantastic engineers in the whole firm, Ms. Karen Bricknack, out of our Baton Rouge office. Karen, hello. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, I'm really doing good because I've got somebody, a really smart one of the smartest people I know on our podcast. And Karen, you've been, again, you started when you were 10 years old.
That's right.
You've had 40 years of experience doing environmental work, just an amazing, amazing resource of knowledge. And you really take care of our clients every day. And one of the fun things I like about you is you're a University of Oklahoma product that actually gets to reside down in Baton Rouge. So that's kind of a tough double life to root for the Tigers and the Sooners because they have played each other sometimes in football and other sports.
It was a little rough since my husband went to LSU, but yeah, we managed.
Yeah, y'all done great. So, you know, NAAQS, you might hear that term out there in the people talking about different things, maybe the NAAQS standard. Karen, help our listening audience. What does that mean?
So NAAQS, N-A-A-Q-S, we love our acronyms in environmental, stands for National Ambient Air Quality Standards. And these standards are established by EPA for pollutants, which EPA has determined can reasonably be anticipated to endanger public health or welfare. That's called an endangerment finding. Sometimes you'll hear that term. These are concentration-based standards of what concentration in the air will be protective of human health and the environment. So there are currently six pollutants that have a NAAQS established for them. Sulfur dioxide, carbon monoxide, particulate matter, both PM10 and PM2.5, which that number refers to the size of the particulate, nitrogen oxides, ozone, and lead.
And so, you know, we think about that list of pollutants, the reality of it is, you know, some of these, I guess a very small amount could be natural occurring, but the majority of these, this basically, this would be some of the air emissions from automobiles and chemical plants and pulp and paper facilities. Am I thinking right on that?
That's correct. Yes. These are pollutants, as you said, some of it is naturally occurring in the atmosphere, but definitely mankind's activities do contribute to that. And these are also pollutants that are found everywhere. So the whole goal of the NAAQS is to focus on nationwide issues, not so much local issues where you may have one pollutant that's a problem in one area, but not throughout the country, whereas these are everywhere.
So EPA has identified these six pollutants. You know, how did EPA get there, and how they established the NAAQS to put all this together? How did it come together?
So EPA has a scientific advisory council that is always looking at what is the data out there on pollutants. That could be medical data, that could be laboratory studies, or it could be epidemiological data. And that's a study of a very large population where you might say, gee, we've got a real problem with asthma in this certain area of the country, and we think that's caused by high ozone, or it correlates to high ozone. So all that information that's out there gets pulled in to this advisory committee, who reviews it and then advises the agency. The list of pollutants has kind of been formed over time, and EPA can always add to that list if they make that endangerment finding. But once they have gotten the data from the Scientific Advisory Council, then they will develop, well, what concentration will protect human health with an adequate margin of safety? And the EPA reviews all of that and publishes a draft standard. They then receive public comment on that before they finalize the standard. And EPA cannot take cost into account when setting the standard. That's very clear in the Clean Air Act. Now, what's interesting about the NAAQS is that EPA is required to review every standard once every 5 years. Early in the history of the Clean Air Act, they weren't really meeting that every 5 years, but now they've gotten much better about that and looking at all the data to see, is it low enough or do we need to make the standards different?
If we thought about the initial standards as maybe they were developed back in the early and mid 70s through today, have the standards ever maybe risen to where we determined that some of these pollutants are maybe a little safer than we first thought? Or has it been just a downward trend over time as it went from the mid-70s through today?
None of them have gone up, but they don't always go down. For example, I think the carbon monoxide standard, it hasn't been changed in a long time. Most of the areas of the country are in compliance with that standard, and there just hasn't been enough scientific data to show a need to make it lower. Ozone is one of those that recently, anyway, has changed almost every time. And so it's continuing to go down as more data is out there. The same thing with particulate matter and then the PM 2.5 standard coming into play. Lead was also reduced about 5 years ago. So it just sort of depends upon what the data shows.
Yeah, and we're always learning. You know, we're always, you know, finding new ways to measure to make sure we're protecting human health and the environment. Karen, do you happen to know if other countries, do they have their own pollutants, or do they look at the U.S. as a model of how they might build their environmental regulations and maybe other developing nations or underdeveloped nations?
So the U.S. is definitely seen as a leader. The World Health Organization has its own standards. A lot of times when you hear about places like Beijing, China, the capital of Mongolia happens to be one of the places that has the most particulates in their air in the entire world. That's primarily due to because most of the people move to the main city for jobs and they burn coal in their homes. So you can imagine you're up in a mountain valley and all that smoke gets trapped. So, you know, there are definitely issues throughout the world, and as countries become more developed, they do tend to look to the U.S. and to see, you know, what can they do? And for control technologies as well, you know, what works, what doesn't work. We have 50 years of experience that they can learn from.
That's really cool. And that's just it. You know, as we've developed this and lived with it and found better ways to address it and control it and help clean it up, the wheel's been invented. Why reinvent it? Let's use the knowledge we've developed to help you know, us and our nation get the right standards. Mm-hmm. So we've got what NAAQS is down. We understand what makes it up. We understand how it's developed. So we've got this, you know, foundation. What comes next?
So once a standard has been finalized, each state has to look at the air quality in their state to determine which areas are in compliance, or we say in attainment of the standard, and which are not. Now, that, of course, means you have to have a monitoring network. So every state has air quality monitors that are positioned throughout the state, depending upon where they feel like the biggest issues are. And that is a state determination. And so they collect data and then can determine if areas are in attainment of the standard or not. And usually in doing that, they use metropolitan statistical areas. So for example, I'm in Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge consists of 5 parishes that are in our metropolitan statistical area, and they use that to determine attainment or non-attainment. So if a state has an area that is not in attainment of the standard, then they have to develop a plan to bring that area into attainment. That may mean new regulations, either on industry or on mobile sources. They can take cost into account in that in developing their plan, but they have to come up with a plan to reduce emissions. And it just depends upon what that local area needs. So one of the really good things about the Clean Air Act is that it is very flexible on that implementation piece. Also, there are federal regulations that are constantly changing that can help an area reach attainment. So one example is automobiles, because automobiles have, are nationwide. The standards are nationwide. So as standards tighten, less pollution has been emitted from cars. One of the pollutants that cars emit is nitrogen oxides. Nitrogen oxides and volatile organic compounds combine with sunshine and heat to create ozone. And so we had a continual problem in the Baton Rouge area meeting the ozone standard. There had been regulations on industry, tightening who could get permits for expansions. Well, what really was the final kicker that got the Baton Rouge area into attainment is that, unfortunately, we had a very bad flood in 2016. Well, the silver lining of that was that so many cars flooded and had to be replaced that you got rid of a lot of old cars and got newer cars that had lower emissions. And as a result, all of a sudden, we were in compliance with the ozone standard. So it's a real mix of factors to come into attainment.
You know, a number of, and that is just fantastic insight. A number of things come to mind from that. One is if you could take a vehicle from the 60s and its emissions package and compare it with a vehicle today, I think it's almost, I know it's at least 50 times or more emissions out of that 1960 vehicle than today's vehicle. It's amazing how that technology has advanced. So that was a real, I guess, missing piece to help the Baton Rouge metropolitan area to upgrade those aging vehicles to newer vehicles. A couple of other things I think that were tried, and I know they had some effect. Maybe some of our listeners remember, you know, stage one and two vapor recovery on the gas pumps, to where as you fueled up your car, you would capture the vapors come out of your car, or when the gasoline is being dropped into an underground storage tank, you would capture those vapors in an effort to try to keep those down. And even in the summertime, in these non-attainment areas, many of them will blend gasoline that has a lower vapor pressure point, RVP, summertime fuel, to try to keep emissions down. Are those some of the tools that they've used to help during those times?
Definitely. And those two are also very good examples of how technology has changed, because most cars now, when you fuel your car, the car has technology on it to capture some of those vapors. So, for example, I think in Louisiana, we were able to get rid of some of the requirements for those low RVP fuels because they were no longer needed. The technology had advanced to where that particular option wasn't necessary anymore.
You know, and it's good to make that point. So that kind of rounds us into an area's reach attainment. Like the Baton Rouge metropolitan area, what happens then once you've gotten to you're below the pollutant level? What comes next?
Well, once you're there, you want to stay there. And so they're not going to change the regulations. They're not going to take everything off, but the state has to prepare a maintenance plan for those areas. And that's designed to keep the area in attainment. So they can have flexibility here, so they can relax some things, such as the vapor controls or the RVP limits. They may say, gee, you know, we had to have cars getting, you know, they're checked once a year to make sure that they were controlling their emissions. Now we can go to once every 2 years. So there is flexibility there, but the monitoring plan stays in place, so they're still checking to make sure that everything's still in attainment at the standard, because nobody wants to go back. Once you've already made attainment, you want to stay there.
Yeah, that's going to be the key, is once you cross that goal line, you want to hold that. And hopefully as you develop more controls and processes improve to try to minimize emissions, that you're able to stay there and not go backwards, because that'd be a bad thing. Thinking about the NAAQS standards, and every 5 years they get reviewed, and they'll continue to be fluid, they'll move, tighten up, if you will. How does that impact industry?
Yeah, it's very important, because depending upon what the attainment status is of the location of your facility and how close you are to the current standard, that can really change your planning, really, for future expansions, operational changes. Because if you're in an area that's really close to the standard, even if you're in attainment, there's a good chance that they may lower that. And so, your next project 5 years down the line, you might have to be dealing with a different standard. And that may mean that you have to have more stringent control requirements. It can make it more difficult to permit your expansions. If you're in a non-attainment area, for a large expansion, you're required to use the absolute best technology out there that will give you the lowest emission rate. And you may have to offset any increase in emissions by finding someone who's made a reduction and buying those reduction credits. So it can get very expensive, and it can also make it take a lot longer to get your permits. So, you know, you do need to know what your status is. Another thing that people don't think about a lot of times is that if you have more non-attainment areas in your state, or and have an attainment area, non-attainment area when you never had one before, all of a sudden your regulatory agency has more costs. So, because they're going to have to do more monitoring, they're going to have to develop regulations, they're going to have to inspect more facilities. And so that may increase the cost for facilities in terms of permitting fees, operational fees, things like that, because all of that has to be paid for. I remember when Mississippi got a non-attainment area due to one county up in the northwest of the state that was part of the metropolitan statistical area for Memphis. And so all of a sudden they had to develop an entire ozone non-attainment program just because they were really close to Memphis. And that was a lot of work for them to have to go through.
That is. And Karen, this has been such a treat for our listeners. You gave some great insight to NACS. You know, if someone were to want more information, they can log into our website, ppmco.com, and there's a contact us button, and they can let us know. We'll be happy to reach back to it. It's just, I tell you, it's been a great podcast. This has been one of my funner podcasts, Karen. You did a great job. Thanks so much, Tom, for taking time for us today, because I know our listeners really enjoyed this, and we'll have you back soon.
Happy to do so.
Well, wonderful, wonderful. So I guess I'll close this out. This is Todd Perry and Karen Bricknack signing off for this episode of PPM Simplifies. Thank you for finding our podcast. For more information, be sure to visit our website at ppmco.com. To stay updated on new episodes, feel free to subscribe to PPM Simplifies on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, this is PPM Simplifies.